It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
And here we go, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Good to see the last week on assignment, my friend, Captain Mike Ward.
Good to be here, Sean. How are you today?
I'm good. And you're back from assignment, which is good as well.
It is. Always good to be on an assignment.
Right. All right. So it kind of laying things out. Welcome, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Appreciate y'all being here. I do do this. I made a note to do this more. Facebook.com/FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. So we've got a very busy FM Talk 106.5 Facebook page, but if you put outdoors on it, it's not as busy, but it's focused more on outdoors Facebook page. I'd love y'all to check that out. It's where we'll post a link to this show in podcast form, get pictures up, stories up as they go through the week. Outdoor stories that come up, I post them up there so you can check them out.
And they can post pictures and stories, right?
That's right. That's right. I mean, stories, pictures and stories.
Pictures.
Yeah, they can do stories too.
Well, we'll have stories about the picture.
Yeah, that's right. I like that. Yeah, so if you'll go on there and let's see, like you can see some of the subjects we're going to talk about this morning. We can talk about, you'll see up there. Also, as we get just news comes out during the week, outdoors news, you can check it out. All right, so as we did that, I did that, told people about the Facebook page, told people about the podcast and the replays of the show. All right. That's all the housekeeping I have to do. Now we can talk hunting and fishing.
I'm ready.
I don't know which one to start off on because right now I can tell you just from conversations we've had with Captain Wayne Miller, conversations you and I could have about just fishing lakes and ponds right now, that the fish are on the bed.
Right.
Fishing's been pretty good, some bigger fish. And like I said, there's plenty of fish with eggs in them, you know, that I'm catching.
Well, right now, when they have eggs in them, now till really about June.
Yeah. And, and Captain Wayne talked about kind of like in the Delta, you know, as soon as you think, all right, well, this is the spawn. It's one of them.
Yes, one of them. No, it's not all. They don't all happen at the same time.
It's one of them. So, yes. And then on the flip side, too, in the inshore side, I think we got to talk about a couple things, and we'll figure out how we're going to – do we talk fishing first or hunting first today? I don't know. It's a good time of year. On the inshore side, two big stories. Captain Bobby, this last week, talking to him on the fishing report, and he sent me all these pictures of slicks.
Yeah.
Fishing already. Slicks. Already. So those fish – I mean, it's been warm.
Well, it's springtime. Look at everything blooming. Yeah, yeah.
Listen to the cough. I'll blow my nose here in a little bit. Yeah, yeah. Everything's blooming. And the fisher, he said he was catching fish, trout, speckled trout, in a foot and a half of water. They're getting shallow pretty fast.
It's springtime.
It's spring. Now, interesting thing is, you know, the first place, and he talked about it, I mean, it's common sense, but until you stop and think about it, maybe you don't think about it right away. The first place to find those fish is they come out of the dead end rivers, the bayous, you know, like a Dog River or Fowl River or a Fish River or any of those places.
That's right.
Is
the deep water.
The deep water. Mm-hmm. The first place to start looking for those slicks is at the mouths of those because they're not all coming out on the same day.
That's right.
And, you know, the fish have this sense of it's spring, but it's also South Alabama.
I might go back that way.
That's right.
But I'm not going on further out there. I'm going to wait and see because if it gets cold, I'm going to go back the other way.
Right. It helps a little bit. Like, you know, in a month or so or a few weeks, we'll be saying, well, the slicks are everywhere. Those fish could be anywhere. But right now when they first come out, the best chance you have is the closer you are to the mouth of one of those places, that's the best place to try to find a slick.
Yeah.
You know, within the range, like Mike just said, where those fish know that if it gets real cold, I don't know if they know anything, but they're – nature tells
we
them.
We think they do.
Yeah, the nature tells them to be ready to go back in. So, he's had really good trips fishing slicks already here. I mean, it's barely March, and he's having good trips. So, if you like fishing slicks and drifting, I love it. And we'll get Captain Bobby on to talk about it in depth. Some of the things we've talked about a bunch on this. If you're old hat at it, you know all this stuff. If you're new to it, just a couple things to think about when you're fishing speckled trout slicks. And if y'all, we'll put some pictures up on the Facebook page so y'all can see some of those slicks if you're new to inshore fishing. But something to think about. Where the slick is like leading a bird, like we're going to shoot a dove or shoot a duck. Where the slick is downwind or down current of where the fish are. Now, it depends if there's current, it's whichever one's more powerful. But the slick is showing up on the water. Now, there could be fish back there in where the slick is, but the fish are usually up above it. The slick That's takes right. a second to come up, that those oils out of the fish, which come from when a trout eats something with water in its mouth. It eats the shrimp. It eats the pogie, whatever. As it squeezes out the water to ingest that, this is the oil that comes off the fish. And when tons of them are feeding, it comes up and looks like somebody dropped suntan lotion or something in the water, or some fried chicken. And it makes a slick.
That's right.
You know, so the fish are up from the slick. That's just something to think about.
So if the current is going from east to west, you want to be up
further east.
Yes. Yeah, where the up current. Yes.
So those fish are up there. So it's not saying if you have a real big school, I've absolutely seen it where you throw in the slick and you're still catching fish because that school's big enough. But if you're throwing in the slick and not catching them, go up current, upwind right. of where that slick is.
And it depends on how much current.
Correct.
You know, if there's not all much kind of, current, you know, but
they
anyway.
Could be right on. Exactly. Yeah, right. Or how shallow the water is.
That's right.
Yeah, this is all, I mean, this all can be tweaked, but it's, you know, a general idea. And another one is to think about this when you're fishing this time of year is have some kind of like quick deploy anchor. Now, it could be if you got the fancy, you got a, one of the automatic anchors, the spikes. You know,
right.
You got one of those. Those are good. Deploy that on the boat. If you're like me, I've got one of the posts, the poles you put in yourself, right? Like Cajun anchor.
Right.
I've got one of the old stainless Cajun anchors. Also have the plastic, the pole something pole that you put down yourself and tie it off to a cleat. In other words, what we're trying to stop that boat without making a ton of noise, because if you're fishing slicks, you're probably in shallower water, and those fish are super sensitive to sound. So when we're drifting, let's say we see some slicks all around, but we're drifting through them. When people get bit, the corks go down. You want to stop there and not right. keep blowing through the fish.
That's right.
So to have
to motor back up to where the
right.
fish are.
So yeah. have something ready. Now, yes, you can put out an anchor. You better be real quiet about it, you know, when you deploy that anchor and let it hang. That's why people use, you know, whether they're using
a power pole
or talon or whatever on their boat, or if, like, I don't have that.
Yeah.
So I have one of these poles, you know, it's a fiberglass pole thing that they're made for it with a T-handle on top.
That's right.
And I have it tied to the cleat on the boat, have it ready to go. Somebody gets bit, ease over, push that thing down the mud, through the oyster shells.
Got a rope on it, yep. You tie it on a cleat.
And then you fish.
Right.
Fish, now we're not getting bit, pick it up, you're drifting more.
Yeah.
So that is just something to have like, oh gosh, yeah, we're getting in the zone. Okay, get that stuff ready before, because sometimes everybody gets bit. By the time you get the fish in and netted and all that, you're past them.
That's right.
And now, like Mike said, you have to go around and do a big production.
Make noise.
Yeah.
That's right. And so, like you say, a lot of times they're in shallow water. If they're in a little deeper water, it's not as bad.
Right. But if you're seeing a lot of slicks, often that's going to be 5 feet of water and shallower.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you see big slicks. I will say sometimes when you see big slicks in deeper water, it's gaff tops.
You don't want a power pole on those.
No. But so just be ready for that. It's a great time of year to fish. And Bobby said, no problem getting live bait right now. But, I mean, this time of year is live bait's always great. But I don't have any problem this time of year. I'm fishing a Voodoo or DOA or whatever you like. I like the Voodoos better under a rattle cord.
Under a cord. Yeah. And that's what I was going to ask you a while ago. I'm sure that's what Bobby was using.
Yes.
Catching them on.
Yeah.
And you
can catch them. I mean, absolutely. When they get in that situation, first light, you can catch them on top water. You can catch them on just jigs but just the go-to, get it done, rattle cork, fluorocarbon leader, Voodoo or DOA shrimp.
Yeah.
But there are a bunch of other ways to catch them right now, but that's just a get it done, easy. Everybody throws the same thing.
And when they're feeding like that, they will hit a lot of different things,
mm-hmm.
you know, but you don't have to go buy a shrimp.
Right. And that's, you know, another thing too, when we're talking about that you get on these schools when you're drifting and you're fishing slicks, you got to make hay when the sun shines. In other words, before that school moves off, somebody scares them or whatever. And that's one argument to be made for artificials. Like, I'm a live shrimp. I mean, y'all, I'm a live shrimp.
Me too.
I'm a live shrimp guy to catch, you know, and if you see me fishing, you know, Mobile Bay in the summertime, I'm fishing live shrimp or croakers or whatever. I'm fishing live bait. But when you're using like Voodoos or DOAs, you can get those fish off, you know, either thrown back or in the cooler and throw back out faster. Your turnaround time versus having to stop, get another shrimp, do all that, turnaround time's better.
Way faster.
And if you only have limited window before that school moves off or something happens, it can probably add, you know, a few more fish to the box every day.
Absolutely.
So kind of rig up on that.
Do they catch them without corks, though? I mean, do
like I said, if you throw in there, if you're going to throw a grub in there, throw an artificial or whatever, you could absolutely catch them.
Yeah.
I just, for me, the cork, like, keeps me in the zone, right?
Right.
Because, and you can miss a hit with the cork. This is just me personally. And then rip it again, and it's still where those fish are.
Yeah.
Versus you got to keep moving if you're throwing a jig and just reeling it. But you absolutely can catch them on that.
Yeah.
You can catch them on a whole bunch of stuff.
I mean, hear most people are using rattle corks.
Yes.
You know, but I mean, in
because sometimes you get hit and miss.
I've caught them without it. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah, you can. Absolutely. It's just, I think it keeps it in the strike zone for me better. You know, and, you know, also if you were over oyster bottom, right?
Yeah.
Then it keeps it up off the oysters so we're not getting hung up.
Sure.
So, I mean, but yeah, you can absolutely catch them with, you know, you could throw just a grub or a slick lure or, you know, but they are, they're feeding on a lot of little shrimp this time of year too. You know, and that's another key. As much as, you know, we're going down the aisle of the tackle store, the big ones look really cool.
Yeah, they do look
They look
good.
Cool.
No, but that's not what you want.
And not that they won't catch them, but you get the smaller of the voodoos, the smaller of the DOAs, and two things, I think it matches more the size shrimp that they're seeing, and number two, I think it's easier for them to get the hook in their dang mouth.
Yeah.
They get the bait in their mouth, and you get, I mean, just something as basic as hookup percentage. I think it works better.
It does work better.
Yes,
I mean, I've talked to Bobby about that many times.
Yep.
That small one works way better. They don't. They never use the big ones.
No, I don't have any.
I think
big
they
ones.
Tried it at first. It didn't work.
I mean, they look cool, but they're, you know, they're not the ones I'm using. So, come back. We'll talk a little bit more fishing, but we got to talk some hunting as well. And turkey season later on this month. We got the youth season. So this year, by the way, turkey starts on Monday for the big kids. The youth season is not the weekend before. It's the 2 days before the big kid season. We'll explain that and a whole lot more when we come back. Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, glad to have you all along. And we mentioned speckled trout, Mike, talking about spring fishing.
Sure.
And I think the speckled trout thing is interesting because it's early, right? But, I mean, the fish aren't working off a calendar. They're working off water temperature and all that. And there's some of this fishing slicks that sometimes doesn't come till the end of March or April, but it's happening right now. And it all could be shut down. We get another cold front or two, moving back in the rivers. But right now, that's happening. But the fish, you look at February, March, inshore species that are doing it.
Yeah.
That are doing it. And that's sheep's head.
Absolutely.
This is the month. I mean, February to some degree, but March, I mean, you're
they
looking
have
for
been killing them.
Yeah, this is, I mean, you're looking at the time to, I mean, they're always there. It's something I always would laugh about. People in the old days say, well, what fish are running? I say, well, they're not salmon, y'all. They're always doing fish stuff. They're in the water. They got to eat. You know, if it's real cold, they don't have to eat as much. But this time of year when the sheep's head are breeding, they just make themselves, they just eat more. They're easier to catch.
Yeah. And they are catching. They're catching a bunch of them. And a lot of them are using those little fiddler crabs.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Now,
we used to do that.
I have never sheephead fished, okay? So where do you get the little fiddler crabs? I see them all over, like, on your docks and stuff. So how do you catch them?
Well, we used to just, you know, catch them by hand and catch them with a net. So when I used to fish sheephead a lot, and that I was younger, we'd go a couple places. So my buddy's dock down at Dolphin Island, we'd get some there. I mean, this is old school enough that we used to have them in, like, the old gallon water jug things you buy from KMB. That's how long ago I was, you know, started that stuff. Catch them there. We used to catch a bunch. I'd get myself in trouble. I don't know where Alabama Marine Fisheries is there at the island on Little Dolphin Island Bay,
mm-hmm.
where the docks
yep.
are there.
Yep.
You should go over there and catch them over there because there are a bunch on that little beach right there. We catch them there. And, so we get them. And we'd also catch fiddler crabs and do them. And we'd also get hermit crabs if times got tough.
Yeah.
And break the shell and use a hermit crab. So we have both of those because also sometimes we didn't have money for shrimp or anything else. Even though we're using the right bait, we just did it because we didn't. That's what
but
we
I
had.
But I see people using shrimp too.
Yeah, shrimp are great. Yeah. But, you know, that bigger crab they like and it stays on the hook better.
Yeah.
You know, it's harder for that sheep's head to eat the thing without getting the hook like it can with the shrimp.
Right.
You watch them with the shrimp, they just chuck.
Eat a little bite. piece. Yeah, all around the hook.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is frustrating. But, yeah, so you can get away with a little less bait thieving if you use fiddler crabs or hermit crabs like we used to do. But that's where gathering – yeah, I don't think there's any, like, commercial place to do that.
No, I've never seen them. I just didn't know how you caught them.
Yeah, that was so. Yeah, we used to catch them like that, put them in a jug, and then the other thing we would do, I guess, it's not news to anybody, but our sheep's head trick, we'd go up if we're on a piling or like when we used to fish the pilings of the Dolphin Island Bridge, we'd take our boat paddle, pull the old 14 foot aluminum boat up there, and then we'd scrape the barnacles off the side to like chum the sheep's head up. You'd knock all those barnacles, break them up, and the pieces of them fall down. The sheep's head get even more fired up.
Yeah. So that was our. So they're eating the
pieces of the barnacle as it's broken up. Yeah, and I guess you're probably knocking little baby crabs and stuff off there. We'd just take the ends of our old beaver tail paddles were flayed because we'd take them and scrape down the side of the pilings with them to knock that stuff loose.
Well, people really get into it. I see them using metal.
That's probably the smart person would. Yeah. We just had what we had. We weren't high tech.
I mean, yeah.
Remember our baits in a 1 gallon K&B water bottle. You know, I mean, just to be frank, when we swear. But yeah, it's a time of year that you really get it done. Sheep's head, you know, we go through this conversation. You're welcome to keep one on my boat.
Yeah.
If you're cleaning them, you're welcome to keep a limit. If I'm cleaning them, you're welcome to keep one. They're good to eat. They're good to eat. They're a pain to clean. You know, they dull a knife up. Fast. Yeah. It's not
well, chainsaw. It doesn't bother chainsaw
that's
too bad.
Well, it does. You get a dull blade then. But so don't not keep them because they are good to eat.
Yeah.
You know, but if you're pouring out a table full of them, you're going to be filleting. Yeah. Get ready to put another edge on that knife afterwards. But they're good to eat. And I tell you what, you get dang sheep head. I know everybody thinks I'm catching 10 pound sheep head all day. You're not. But if you're catching 2 pound sheep head, those jokers pull drag, man.
Oh, yeah, they do. But they do catch some big ones now.
They catch some giants, but I'm saying.
And this is the time of year they catch those big ones.
Very much so.
Yes.
But you just hear people go, man, every time we go, we catch, you know, 15, they're 10 pounds. I said, probably not a real 10 pounder, but they pull like they're 10 pounds.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we're so used to like catching little sheep head while we're trout fishing during the spring and summer. But when you go getting those big ones, you know, that are breeding, and I say big ones, 2.5, 3.5 pounds, they're fun to catch, man.
You know, I know that I think it was a couple of years ago, a friend of mine caught one, like, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, it was 13 pounds, I believe.
Man.
And it was a tournament going on in Pensacola or something, and he won the tournament. I believe it was 13 pounds. You going to pull up state records?
Yeah, yep.
Let's pull up state records and see what the state record is.
You prepare yourselves, y'all.
Yeah.
It's, at least according to this, is from Coastal Angler Magazine. 16-pound sheep's head highlights record-setting year for Alabama. This was in – here's the story. This was in October 2021 to October 2022. Yeah. Said Alabama saltwater anglers have been on a record-setting pace with 11 fish entering the record books from October 2021 to October 2022. Two of those records remained on the books for only months. Scott Bannon, who you all know and love, director of Alabama Marine Resources, said that only compares with the recent spate of record fish in 2006 when 13 records were set. So they're talking about overall, but they focus here on a bunch of different fish. But the sheep's head at 16 pounds.
That's monstrous. And that was, I think that was 2 years ago that my buddy caught won that deal over in Pensacola, wherever it was.
I don't think I've even gotten in the neighborhood of 16 sheep's head. I mean, a 10 pounder.
Think of how that would pull.
Yeah, it says here it is. One species familiar to Alabama anglers had the record broken twice is sheep's head. Wesley Olson landed a huge sheep head that weighed 14 pounds, 4 ounces, but it didn't stay on top long. Kendall Jeans reeled in a monster sheep head that hit the scale at 16 pounds, 6 ounces.
And we got a picture up here y'all can't see,
yeah,
but it's a monster.
It's a monster. So, yeah, but I'll say this, the 5-pounder pulls plenty.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just saying that, like, right now is a good time. You can always go. It's not like the sheep's head go anywhere, but they make themselves more available this time of year. They feed more. They're less picky about eating and getting hooked.
Yeah. You know, I don't know what causes that, but you have cycles like that from year to
breeding,
year.
Breeding, that takes, you know.
No, what I'm saying is you have certain years that people catch big fish, mm-hmm. and they break a record after a record, same year. They'll catch, yeah. They might break the record 3 or 4 or 5 times.
You wonder what happened maybe some years before that set those fish on a growth spurt, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it happened on speckled trout. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you have, like, mm-hmm. the rodeo where, I mean, everything, if you don't have a 6-7 pounder, you don't, not
yeah,
there.
There's been some 8 pounder.
You know, years, then
there's
some years.
5.3.
A 4-point-something might win it.
Yeah.
I remember the rodeo, this has been a long time ago, Bill Nunnery caught a king mackerel, I think it was 68 pounds, I believe. And a friend of mine caught one 63 pounds, or maybe it was 64 pounds. I can't remember. He didn't make the board.
Wow.
On the top three,
wow.
king mackerel. You
wow.
know, and a top 10 would have been over 55 pounds.
Right.
And that has never happened again.
Yeah, what was it?
I don't know.
Was there a crop of fish that were just bigger, or were those bigger fish where they got caught more? I don't know.
It did happen several years back on the King Master Tournament out of Biloxi in the fall. I forget what tournament it was, but it was in November where I think a 70 or a 70-something pounder was caught, and there was a bunch of fish over 60 pounds caught. So it's just, it comes in cycles like mm-hmm. that. You know, it's kind of like tuna. You know, same thing. I mean, they're catching some tremendous tuna out there right now. I mean, really, really big tuna, 200, 220, 30 pounds or so. State record's 230 pounds, I think, for Alabama now.
But I remember seeing, like, when our buddy Jim Cox, he was caught one that was 173 or something, that had been some years ago. And I remember thinking, it's been decades ago.
Yeah.
But that was like a rodeo winner, like, hands down, you know. Huge tuna.
Oh, yeah.
But maybe it wasn't even the rodeo. I don't know. It was a big deal. And to think of our conversation back from the boat show, like Kurt Tillman, he's like, yeah, we had one that was, you know,
224 pounds.
Laying on the deck and one 190. And then we saw one that was really big. What?
Yeah. He said he had, well, I think he had it on, had it within 10 feet of the boat.
Yep.
He said it was possibly 250, maybe 270 pounds. Would have definitely broke the state record. And you know, I've told this story before on the show. A friend of mine had the state record tuna, yellowfin tuna, for probably 30 years.
How much did it weigh?
164 pounds.
Maybe
for
that's
like
what
30
Jim,
years.
Maybe that's what Jim did, did with that 170. I mean, it was like a big deal,
well,
that
yeah.
170.
You know, you break the record 164, and it's a 170-something. Yeah,
yeah,
that's a really big
I
deal.
Maybe that's what it was. But it was such a big deal. I remember going, gosh, tuna get that big, and now it's, you know.
Yeah, 170, 80, 90 pounder. That's just a nice tuna nowadays.
Wow.
Things have changed. I don't understand it. I don't know what makes the difference. They're fishing for them a little different now than they used to.
People are better
for
at fishing
sure.
for them. Yeah.
I mean, back years ago when you was fishing for tuna, you trolled lures around, you know, and just happened to hit one, and maybe in the wild blue yonder, you'd catch one. But now, I mean, people are going to live bait and chunking for them and all that kind of stuff. And it has changed the way that people are fishing for them. And I'm sure that has something to do with it. And back in the day, nobody would go out in January, February, March trying to catch tuna.
Yeah.
There was nobody doing that. Nobody even knew they were out there at that time.
So, go look at it now. Go look at the lumps right now.
Oh, yeah. You go out there now and there might be 50 boats on. You could just about walk boat to boat.
Yeah.
Fishing them.
So, I mean, whether it be tuna or be sheep's head, there's some big ones. And the sheep's head thing right now, if you were thinking about going, it's a nice thing too. You can make you don't have to get there early, don't have to stay late, just go out. And I would go to, I mean, west side where I am, go to the pilings of Dolphin Island Bridge, go to any of the gas wells in the bay. Those sheep's head are on those, you know,
and
right now.
Right out by the lighthouse.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. But I mean, if it's rough, you can even stay in closer and catch those fish. So good luck with that. All right, coming back, we will shift gears, talk some turkeys. There's some things to talk about. Quit yelper whipping the turkeys on management area, public land, and elsewhere. We'll talk about that and season dates when we come back. All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward. I'll make one quick mention of this, and that's it. We're probably going to visit this on shows later this month. You know what season it is? People say fishing season,
hunting season.
It's draw season.
Draw season.
So, if you're wanting to hunt somewhere out of state, out west, but not always out west too. Some Midwest states are doing it. I mean, there's draws in. You know, I was looking through Iowa, Virginia has a draw. Oh, that's for their elk. But the Dakotas, Iowa. There's draws for let's see, Kentucky. Kentucky's got a draw. That's their elk draw. Nebraska's got a draw. South Dakota, North Dakota got draws. Kansas got draws. Yeah. So if you want to go those kind of places, you know, to deer hunt, whitetail hunt, you got your draws. And then if you are, you know, like me, interested in hunting out west, the next month or two, you need to check. So if you want to
mule
put in
deer, elk,
mule deer, elk, yeah. If you Arizona, Nevada, Colorado, Utah, New Mexico. New Mexico's interesting, and we're going to do a show on this in depth because I want to talk turkeys here. But like New Mexico is an interesting one. If you're a guy like me that daydreams about hunting out west, and you're like, man, I got no points. And build up points in the draw, you know, successive
people
years.
People don't understand what points are.
Points are so, yeah, each year you
get drawn this year, you get a point.
Your hat goes, you're so if year one, your name gets put in the hat once.
Right.
And there's some that are more complicated in multiplier, but let's just say there are, I'm just going to give you the very basic version of this, because there's going to be some person out there goes, well, that's not completely right, Sean. Let's
that's
generally.
Fine. Every state is different.
Yeah. The year one, you go in once. If you don't get drawn year one, the next year you go in twice. Year three, you go in three times. Year four, you go in four times. Gives you a better chance of getting drawn.
Right.
And then you got to deal with what area you put in and how hard it is to draw. We're going to do a show on it, but just letting you know that draw season is here. But I mentioned New Mexico, and you see that? Is that highlighted right there, Mike? I got it highlighted.
I see it.
That's coming up this month, March 20th, is the deadline to draw. New Mexico is interesting because it's a straight lottery. There are no points. So person's been putting in for New Mexico for 20 years, and you might put in for your first year, have the same chance of drawing.
Yes.
Which is interesting as a state to look at if you've not been building up points. I mean, even though I build up points in other states, I put in for New Mexico just because what the heck? Why not? You may get lucky and draw this tag.
Yeah.
So,
but now,
and there's some monster elk in New Mexico.
It is. But now you can still go without drawing.
You can go through an outfitter, buy landowner tags.
That's right.
Yeah. And you can absolutely cut a check and go do stuff. But I'm talking about if you're trying to do stuff on a budget or whatever and draw.
That's me.
Yeah. And if you're trying to do it, you can draw some, you know, it's just a luck of the lottery. For New Mexico, and like that person I said, who's been putting in for decades, has no more chance than you. Now, that's not true when you go to Colorado or Arizona or Utah, but in New Mexico, it is true. So check that out. We'll talk more about the draws coming up.
You know, I just got drawn for turkeys.
Yes.
I put in for, I think it was in February or something, for turkey tag in Kansas. See, this is the first year that you ever had to even draw for a turkey. It was always non-resident. You just go over the counter and buy a turkey tag.
Well, too many people did that, and their populations, I think,
went
are not
way down.
Yeah, not what
way
they were.
Down. Yeah, no, you know, everybody tells me the turkeys
they're
out
going
there,
through what we started through. And if y'all listen to last week's show, our conversation with Chuck Sykes, it, you know, the long-term trend is not good on turkey populations. It hit the southeast first, but it's now showing up in places like Kansas.
Yeah. I mean, they tell me, because I haven't been going out there for just a couple of years, but they tell me that you would go from field to field to field to field, and there would be 50 turkeys in this field, 200 in this field, might be 300 over there. And now you go field to field to field to field, and you might see four or five over here, two or three over here. And I did see more this past year out there riding around than I have in the past 2 years prior. So maybe they are coming back a little bit.
Let's hope. Let's hope. And that's what we're trying
I'm hoping to deplete the population by one.
There you go.
This coming year.
One of those butterballs, dang 23-pound gobblers out there.
Yeah.
And, you know, Kansas has the ability. You can hunt easterns. You can also, and you've got some areas of the state, I think, have Rios in them.
They do.
And then you have, do you have any population of... I don't know if they have Merriam's at all.
I'm not sure.
I know Western Kansas, I think, is Rio's, East is Eastern's.
That's right. Yes.
Back home here, turkey stuff. All right. So I mentioned the Facebook page. Y'all can see these stories over on facebook.com/FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Two turkey stories or things from the state. First of all, season this year, right? So you got zone 1, 2, and 3. All right. We are, with some exception, you know, most of us here are in zone 1.
Yeah.
Only difference is Clark and Monroe County that have the fall thing, you know, that makes them fall into zone 3. But season starts on the 25th of this month. That is a Monday. Okay.
This and is, man, have I had people calling me.
Yeah.
Woo wee. Now, yeah. I think they think I set the season.
Well,
So they have been venting to me.
Yeah, well, it is. It's a Monday start. And the other thing to pay attention to here is the youth hunt. The youth hunt is a Saturday and Sunday before that Monday.
Yeah.
It's not like in the past where you would have had youth season the Saturday, Sunday, a week. And then, so as we talked about in last week's show, with them trying to do what they can to let more gobblers breed hens before they're killed, they've moved everything. So the youth season is actually on the Saturday, Sunday.
The 23rd and 24th.
Right.
That Monday. Adult season is the 25th on a Monday.
Right. And, you know, what they're probably doing there. I know what they're doing. They're slowing down the gobbler harvest early because that's what they need to do. But that Monday effect is like it used to be. I told you about Pennsylvania when I was a kid going up there, what they call buck season, which is the rifle season, started on a Monday. They did that to throttle back how many people showed up on day one.
Yeah.
Even though it didn't work.
They shut the whole town down.
Yeah, where my mom's people come from, they shut everything down. Monday, there was no school. School was out and everything.
They just don't understand the hunters and the fishermen, do they?
No, they don't. But, it worked out that way that people just go ahead and go anyway. But so y'all know, so turkey season for the grown-ups starts on a Monday, but the 2 days before Saturday, Sunday, the 23rd and 24th, are the youth season.
Yeah.
So there's just changes out there. And you can see all this. We got the link in the map there. Once again, your season starting for zones. We're 1 and 3. So most of us here are in zone 1. Zone 3 is Clark and Monroe County, but they in both
of
those.
So when does that open up?
The same. Yeah, it starts on the same. It's the zone, Zone 2 that's the one that's up there in the northwest part of the state where they don't start at the same time. So. But for us here, you start – so the zone 1 and 3. So any of us down here, if you're in our listening area, you're in zone 1 or 3.
Yeah.
And we all start in 1 or 3. Once again, big kids on the 25th, the kids, 23rd and 24th. They also have the special disabled hunt on that Sunday, the 24th. Zone 2, I mean, it's later. It's in April, but that's not none of us down here. And, there's a lot more to – we talk about the decoys and all that stuff, and we'll get into it before season starts. But I wanted y'all to know that. And it also gets me – I want to have time here to get to the other thing that got my attention. And this is God's honest truth, y'all. So the state has been pushing this on their social media pages. It says this. This rule applies to wildlife management areas with a turkey season. Also, this rule is not new this season. Hunters should read and understand the information related to WMA usage and contact us with any questions. They've been pushing this out, and I'm going to put it in Sullivanese, and then I'll read you what the state says. Y'all quit yelper whipping the turkeys out there.
Yelper whipping the turkeys, okay.
I mean, that's what we've always called it.
When, yeah.
You know, we stay off calling it birds before season because, I mean, birds get call shy.
Yeah.
Turkeys get yelper whipped, as we call it, when they've been called to too much. And people go out, instead of owl hooting or crowing, people get on that yelper to make a bird gobble. Listen, in the early days of hunting like Upper Delta WMA, I mean, we're guilty of doing that, trying to locate birds. But over time, if one person does it, it's one thing. Because every boat drifting down the Alabama River does it, eventually they get, where they're over it. So the law is this. It is unlawful to possess or use any wild turkey calls to mimic sounds made by wild turkeys from March 1st until the opening day of youth turkey season, which we know is the 23rd, and from the close of youth turkey season to the opening day of physically disabled turkey season or regular turkey season, opening day on WMAs with a turkey season. In other words, until it is season.
Yeah.
No yelping.
The big signage says, stop prank calling those turkeys.
Hey, that's kind of what we're doing.
With
right?
a big stop.
Yeah. That's what we're doing, right? You're pranking them out there, But, I mean, it's here's what makes sense. If you're in a club or you got private land, are you out there yelping to your turkeys beforehand?
I'm not. I know people that go and they do that. I don't do that.
I
know
the turkeys. Older guys I learned from, I didn't know any better, but the older guys I learned from would tell me, don't do that, boy.
Wasting time. I mean, what you doing? If you're not going to kill the turkey, I know you want to hear them gobbling and do all that.
You can owl to them and crow to them.
I mean, stay away from where, the turkeys are and just go and kind of listen. Yeah. Maybe from the dirt road or whatever. Just go stand and listen. And
so if you're doing that.
Don't do any call. I mean, I don't do that.
If you're doing that on your hunting club with 10 members, whatever.
And they're all 10 out there doing that.
Let alone think about public land,
right?
When all day long folks are riding and yelper whipping. So I understand what the state's doing. Yeah. When they put this law in, somebody will say, well, they're trying to limit my right. They're trying to make the season better for everybody who hunts.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. That's what they're trying to do. They're not. If anything, they're going to make it easier to kill that gobbler.
Yeah.
Don't get out there and call at them and make them call shot before season.
Yeah. I mean, opening weekend of turkey season is always better than 3 or 4 weeks on into the season. And why? Mostly because they've been called to so much.
No, it's true. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, don't do it. So that, and it's, if you'll go look, we got that post up. You can go check out FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors on Facebook, and you'll see that story. You can read more on that. And I'd love to hear from you. Do y'all have that kind of rule where you hunt? Let us know on the Facebook page. You know, do you have a club rule where you?
Yes. Let me tell you, I know several clubs that, yes, you can't even get in the woods till opening day of turkey season.
Quit pranking them. Yeah. That's what the state says. All right, coming right back. More of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward. Glad to have y'all here. And something else to think of, too, as we're talking turkeys. Good news. Let's remind folks, too, turkey banquet's coming up. I know there's so many. If I miss one, but I know the 21st Mobile Bay Strutters.
Yes. You know, I was on the board on that for ever.
Yes.
20-something years, I guess. And I'm not on board anymore, and I haven't gotten anything on it yet.
Yeah, I just saw this through the NWTF website. So the Mobile Bay Strutters 21st, the West Mobile Golden Spurs banquet May 10th, and the Southwest Alabama banquet May 18th. So two in Mobile and one in Citrano.
Yeah, one before and I know
there's
the season.
A couple, and there's a couple other groups that may not be in
there.
Yeah,
you got Jackson. Jackson just had theirs last Thursday night. Yeah, and there are other groups for sure. I think there's a Saraland group.
Well, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, Evergreen. If you'll go, you can go and check out, if you go to NWTF and just put in the banquets near me, and you'll be able to find the banquet near you. So.
Yeah.
Turkey Federation, we've told you before how important it is, but if you listen to last week's show, and if you didn't catch it, you can always go check it out in podcast form.
Yeah. Mobile Bay Strutters again, what date was that?
The Strutters are the 21st.
The 21st, okay.
Yep, that's the 21st. And they're the 21st, May 10th, West Mobile Golden Spurs, and the 18th, Southwest Alabama, the Citronelle.
Okay, that's Thursday before youth season,
mm-hmm.
and that's the Thursday before it opens up Monday for adult season.
That's right.
Mobile Bay Strutters, and I assume it's going to be at Moe's.
I'm guessing, let's see here. Run me out of time here. Moe's.
Okay.
That's where it is. So, some of the things we're talking about with turkeys and trying to, figure out what's going on with turkey populations, Turkey Federation has been funding a lot of that research. So, another reason to get in.
Yes.
Yeah. So, it's important stuff. Now, speaking of the turkeys, too, something you mentioned when you walked in this morning, I think it's worth us talking about. We've talked about in the past. If y'all have corn out now, right? Still corn out, corn feeding, you're getting pictured, whatever. And it's kind of warm. We started off the show talking about how it's, been up.
Spring is here.
80-something the other day.
That's right.
Aflatoxin in corn. And there's a lot, if you Google this, if you want to go read in depth, A-F-L-A-T-O-X-I-N, aflatoxin in corn. This is something that exists in corn, but as it gets warmer, it goes berserko.
Yeah.
I think anything over 70 degrees, it really starts. Here's an article said, many avid hunters want to support healthy deer populations. Some try to do this by providing supplemental feed. There are potential positive impacts from properly conducted supplemental feeding program, but there's also risk, even under the best conditions. One of the risks is toxins produced by fungi. Aflatoxins are toxic chemicals produced by some species of fungus. They're first identified in 1961. After more than 100,000 turkeys and other domestic animals died from ingesting aflatoxin contaminated feed. And that was in livestock turkeys.
Man.
So, and often we talk about this too, the quality of the corn that we get that goes to feeding critters is not the not the highest quality.
Yeah, right? And they say, now from what I understand, that the corn is grown here now in Alabama because it's so humid and so much moisture and everything in the corn that is what the aflatoxin comes more in Alabama and Mississippi corn than it would, say, from Kansas or Missouri or Iowa corn.
That makes sense, yeah. What's inside it. But then, of course, would also the ambient humidity and temperature outside it, too, right? When it sits in a feeder with the humidity. And,
right.
It said, you know, since that time, regulations have been put in place to protect humans and animals within the human food supply. So they test it and make sure it's a higher grade corn. However, wildlife feed often doesn't have the same level of protection. In some cases, corn with aflatoxin levels above legal limits for livestock is sold for wildlife use. So what they would say is not okay for livestock turkeys or
livestock
cattle.
Not turkeys.
Well, livestock turkey.
Okay.
You couldn't use it for turkeys in a turkey house that you're raising to sell, you know, to Butterball.
Or they wouldn't give it to chickens.
Right. But they will sell it for deer feed or, you know, to put out there. I'd read a little bit. I mean, it's a detailed story, and y'all can go online and look at more of this. But it said, turkeys and other birds are at a higher risk for aflatoxin exposure than mammals like deer. So even though it might not hurt deer, the birds, it's not good. Turkeys fed levels of aflatoxins as little as 100 to 200 parts per billion showed liver damage and decreased immune function within 2 weeks. Northern bobwhites are also negatively affected in similar concentration. Importantly, bobwhites and white-winged doves have been shown to eat aflatoxin-contaminated feed as readily as uncontaminated feed, so they don't discriminate. But they show that aflatoxins could be harmful to wildlife and other game species. And there's, like, these studies show, I mean, like, cardinals and birds that just come to the feeder, this stuff can be deadly to them. And as we're talking about how to, you know, keep our turkey populations from going down even more, it's a danger out there. And it's something that might not be an issue in some of this research. Wintertime here, colder. It does get wet, but we get dry fronts come through and all that. It doesn't seem to explode until, I think it's around 70 degrees.
Which is now.
So if you've got those feeders full of corn because you want to keep feeding your deer and get pictures, you could be doing, you know, damage to your turkey population. It says as fast as, like, in the summertime, it says by the fifth day, this is a study they're showing, like, different times of the year. They showed in summertime temperatures in July, within 5 days, so they got the good feed. They bring in that it's not contaminated beforehand. They put it in the feeder. Within 5 days, it showed levels of aflatoxins that were higher than, they said, greatly exceeded than those levels that would harm turkey, quail, and other birds.
I mean, that's something that, you know, is that something that's really might be a big part of what our problem is?
I don't know.
Because there's
corn
feeders
everywhere.
Everywhere, yes. Yeah. And, you know, it depends on where you get your corn, too.
Yeah. So, I mean, just things to think about. You know, and they've talked about it in some of the podcasts I listen to for quail management and all that, because they really want, on these big quail preserves, they really want to feed, like, where they have wild quail.
Yeah.
Really want to feed them in the spring because it has them have bigger clutches of eggs and more successfully bring off new quail. They don't feed corn at all. They feed sorghum, milo.
Right.
Can still get it, but it's harder for the alpha toxin to form with it, and so that's why they feed that. So if they're saying even if you want to feed your deer, they'll eat sorghum and milo, feed that instead of corn this time.
This is something we need to talk about more.
Okay, put it in our notes, and we'll do it next week.
I'll
put this up on the Facebook page as well. All right, see y'all next week. Have a great one.